Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Q, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, the Phillies will make a lineup change tonight. Rhys Hoskins and Adrubal Herrera not in the lineup tonight. Scott Kingery and Aaron Altair will be. But, look, this is all part of trying to rotate players into the lineup. And guys like Kingery and Altair probably play 90 to 100 games in the season. Well, this happens to be one of them tonight.
And you're in the middle of 17 games in a row. So, yeah, sooner or later here, I think Bryce will get a day off here, I think.
Oh, they'll have to. You can't play 162 games. You can if you have the DH. If you don't, you can't do it. All right, Audrey Snyder in a few moments. Dave Cecchini, final half hour. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. The Dodgers overcome Yasiel Puig's home run and win it.
Dodgers hoping for a walk-off from Peterson, who has six home runs on the year, and a fly ball to right. It's on its way, and it is a walk-off home run for Jock Peterson. And the Dodgers win it 4-3.
All right, the Charlie Steiner with the call last night on the Dodgers radio network on KLAC. As the Dodgers won it over the Reds at Chavez Ravine. Joining us now from The Athletic is Audrey Snyder. Audrey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
You got it, Steve. Good to be on.
All right, let's start with Matt Millen, because obviously you were able to put something together on Matt and his return to Beaver Stadium, his return to the broadcast booth. How did the entire scene and how did he strike you?
Yeah, it was really a special scene, Steve, and as I wrote on The Athletic, I mean, that to me was the biggest takeaway of Saturday. I mean, the spring game, we all know it is what it is, practice 15, but Matt looked really good, sounded really well, and speaking with him, you know, he was telling me that this is just the next step in the process, that now, you know, he doesn't have to wear that surgical mask all the time like he did when he was out at NCAA wrestling in Pittsburgh, and, you know, it's just a matter of easing back into his activities. He's exercising again. All these dietary restrictions he's adjusting to, his wife's helping him with it. But I thought Matt really looked really good, sounded great. And I thought it was really a special scene, Steve, when you look back at the ovation that Beaver Stadium that the fans gave him on Saturday. And, you know, if fans were watching at home on the broadcast, I think you could really sense it there as well. His eyes kind of, you know, teared up. And speaking with Matt before the game, I mean, he was just thrilled to be back doing what he loves to do. And he was telling me, you know, he never had any thoughts about not going back to broadcasting. That's kind of been, you know, helping drive him through the whole process. So absolutely, I thought that was the story of Saturday.
Yeah, no, it's Jack and I went up and saw him before the game, because obviously we're on the same time, so we had a chance to talk to him before the game. He seemed terrific, especially when he started telling Al Davis stories, then we knew he was back to normal.
Yes, I was getting some good stories pregame as well when I went up there. I must have been up there before you guys pretty early on.
Yeah, in fact, we got there, and then when we were leaving, Bruce Clark came in. So it was great to see both Bruce Clark and Matt Millen back together again. That was a really nice moment. So the Blue White games played, as you say, it is what it is. It's the 15th scrimmage. There's a lot that goes along with it. What kind of read did you get from talking with coaches and players after the game about how they felt the spring went and where things go from here?
You know, I always think it's really great to pick the coordinators' brains after the spring and just kind of see where do they think things stand, you know, who stood out to them. And one of the things that surprised me was Ricky Ronnie made mention that he thought K.J. Hamler was arguably the most improved player on the offense this spring, which, and Ronnie even said, he's like, I know, like, this might surprise some people. But I think that tells you, speaking with KJ earlier this spring, I mean, they're going to have to use him more than they did last year. You know, they've made that effort to go out, get these graduate transfer wide receivers, which they've done. They'll get those guys in the summer. But KJ has really been the leader of that group. They need him to be the leader of that group. And then flipping over to the other side of the ball, you know, you look at the defense, and it's, you know, I think up front we heard so much about the speed of this D-line, the work with these defensive ends. I'd heard from a lot of people this spring that they're really high on Shaka Toney, not just as the player as we've seen, but right. the mental side of his game. So many guys have told me, so many coaches, that he is the smartest defensive end in that room and that it's just a matter of making sure Shaka doesn't overthink things. But they certainly think, you know, he's kind of on the verge of a breakout. And Brent Pry also said that they have, right now, they feel like they have five linebackers that they could play with, that they could win with. But the key for them is to get six. So is it Brandon Smith? Is it Lance Dixon? You know, is it Charlie Ketcher? Like, who's going to be that sixth guy? Will really be something that we'll have to keep an eye on in camp. But, you know, I thought Noah Kane was impressive on Saturday, and I think you just kind of keep piecing this thing together, Steve, because that's what spring is. I mean, it's 15 little snippets. You see the end result, but so much of the progress that was made, that was talked about, really wasn't a matter of what we saw on Saturday.
I will say this about Noah Kane. His situation is a little bit different than blue-white games in the past. For example, and I've used Eric Heffelfinger was a really good scout team running back. Really good scout team running back. In other words, if he'd gone 1AA or Division II, he'd have been a heck of a running back for somebody. But on this level, no, it's not going to happen. But Noah Kane's different. He came in as a highly recruited running back, and it was really the first exposure everybody had to seeing him. And I think that's one takeaway I do take from the blue-white game that told me something about him, as opposed to having like a blue-white game star that's going to go back to scout team when it's all said and done.
Right. No, I think you're spot on there. I mean, this is a guy who's going to come in, who's going to contribute. I mean, he's going to play this fall in some capacity, and I thought Jawan Sider made an interesting point this spring when he said that, you know, Noah Kane is a guy who they believe, who they've seen on film, gets stronger as the game goes on. And I think an interesting part of that, too, is this is a guy who hasn't had a ton of wear and tear, which might sound crazy because his high school stats were insane. He's a five-star back. But he was sharing carries at IMG with Trey Sanders, the top back in the country. So they were very conscientious for 2 years of how he was being used. So we're going to see some sort of a timeshare with him, Journey Brown, Ricky Slade this fall. And Slade was also a guy who, despite what his numbers were in high school, and they were remarkable, his high school coach was also really smart about how they used him. In a lot of games, Ricky wasn't playing much of the second half. Quite a few games, he didn't even get in the fourth quarter at all. So I think it's really interesting when you kind of look, Steve, at these backs, and I think this might be something we see more and more of across college football is, how conscientious are these teams, are these players about the wear and tear at that position? So, you know, guys are kind of in favor of a platoon at this point, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, well, Mike Weber and J.K. Dobbins showed at Ohio State last year that, you know, that whomever could get to the fourth quarter and could get it done was the guy they go with. And between the opening kickoff and the end of the third quarter, everybody would go into the fourth quarter fresh. Now, of course, the key part's going to be, for many people, will be the quarterback deal. You and I both know that zero is solved in the spring. Never is when it comes to an open position at quarterback. But in talking with others, what kind of viewpoint did they give you on it?
You know, I think, Steve, this is a wide open competition. And I say that because back in the winter when James Franklin kind of had his season wrap-up press conference around the second signing day, he said, you know, if spring ball started, it'd be Tommy the one, Sean Clifford the two, and so on and so forth. Well, obviously, Tommy never was full go this spring, so he never got a chance to be that one. So then, you know, you keep the door open for Clifford. He takes all those number one reps. Will Levis gets elevated to the number two job. And so I think, you know, they exit this thing and say, okay, in my mind, Tommy has the body of work. He has the experience. I mean, they've been high on this guy for years for a reason, right? So to me, if and when he's healthy, I think he could be the guy. But Sean Clifford has shown he's not going to go away quietly. I mean, this is somebody who has a really bright future here. Maybe it's still a year too soon, but I expect this to be a camp competition. How long they drag it out in camp, I mean, it's going to depend. Ricky Rahne said they need somebody, one of these guys, to step up and grab that job. And so, you know, I think, Steve, it's everybody would want this to be decided sooner than later, but they really couldn't learn much about that position, at least with Tommy, just because of the limitations this spring. So, again, we've seen a limited sample size on Tommy, the pure quarterback, which I think is unfair to him over the years because of what he was asked to do and what he did as the Lion. But, yeah, I think in my mind it's an open competition. You see how this thing shakes out. And for a point of reference, I went back the other day and looked. When it came down to Tommy and Trace, the starter was named 10 days before the season opener. So is that the same time frame they go with this year? We'll see, but certainly that's going to be the storyline in the months ahead.
Yeah, it makes sense, only because if you know the timing of when they scrimmage and so forth, I probably was named a couple days after the last scrimmage, as a matter of fact, yep. when they did that. When you look in the past, no, obviously a different coaching staff, but Michael Robinson was about 230, 228, 230. When he played in an all-around situation. Got himself down to about 216, 218 when he finally had his chance, when he knew he was going to be only a quarterback. Tommy Stevens was about 240 last year. Now he's 230, 228, somewhere in that range. Is that one of the reasons why he wanted to drop the weight, that he wanted to be more at a quarterback weight?
Yes and no. I mean, I think part of it is all they wanted him to do. But then again, Steve, we never really got to see all that they wanted him to do last year. I mean, his role was supposed to be more than it was, but because of the injury, it wasn't. So I do think, yeah, the weight fluctuation, that's part of it. I mean, we've seen the mobility. We've seen the athleticism. But a lot of these guys, I mean, their weights are changing all the time. And then, you know, I remember when we talked with Dwight Gault last summer, everybody, he said Tommy was like 250, and everybody was like, whoa, what, you know, what's going on here? But then he got it down to a more manageable weight. So I think part of that is just, you know, coming back from the injury, getting him where they want him to be. But I'm not sure what playing weight they have in mind for him as a quarterback. So that definitely will be something that we'll have to kind of keep an eye on. But, I mean, he's a big kid. And if you look kind of at his background, that's always been the thing. He's been a big physical guy. And it's crazy if you look at him from when he got here till now, looks drastically different, you know, because of what this strength program has done. But, yeah, we'll have to see, Steve, because I think the thing, and Tommy understands this, I thought it was interesting this spring that he said, yeah, you know, I understand why people are going to question my arm strength, because they haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of it, you know. He understands why people are going to question the durability after all that happened last year. So we'll have to see what that ideal playing weight is. But, no, that's a good point you brought up.
How do you sense, in talking with people, who the leaders are going to be? Because this is the time where leadership shows up. It's actually the time when the coaches aren't around.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I thought was impressive, and I outlined it a little bit more on The Athletic, but Cam Brown is a guy who is the leader of this defense right now, and they fully expect that he's going to continue to be that guy. And, you know, talking with Cam a couple times this spring, how last season ended did not sit well with him at all. And Brent Pry even said it, that in the locker room at the Citrus Bowl, Cam Brown stood up there and, you know, laid it out for everybody and said, we need to do more. This is unacceptable. This can't happen again. And that really has set the tone for the offseason. Talking with Antonio Shelton earlier this spring, he mentioned it too. You know, these guys have said they've let a lot of opportunities slip through their hands a couple times. They pointed to the Ohio State game, of course, last year as one of those. And they said, you know, these upperclassmen, that, yeah, this is their chance to kind of right this ship. So Cam Brown is definitely that guy for the defense. And on the offense, one of the guys who a lot of players have mentioned has been K.J. Hamler. I mean, we both know, you know, being around the team, seeing these guys, you know K.J.'s vocal. I'm sure fans can certainly sense that just from watching at home, too. But his personality is infectious, and you can really notice that when wherever he is, guys just kind of seem to flock to him. So he's going to be that leader in that receiving core, and they're going to need him to be one of the leaders on this offense. And undoubtedly, whoever the quarterback is, I mean, that's going to have to be one of the other guys, whether it's Clifford, whether it's Tommy Stevens. But certainly, I thought Cam Brown kind of taking the reins on the other side of the ball was one of the biggest developments this spring, for sure.
Audrey, always a pleasure. I really appreciate the time very much.
You got it, Steve. Take care.
Audrey Snyder from The Athletic. Dave Cicchini, next half hour, head football coach at Bucknell. We'll get his read on how the Bucknell spring went as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, powered by Sunbury Motors. Well, that will be obviously the story that will be written over and over again until mid to late August about the quarterback situation. I'll say this. I don't think it hurts that when you're picking among quality. To me, that's the big item. The big item to me is when you sit there and you're looking over and saying, I'm not so sure about how, quote, good these guys are. And that's a problem. When you're picking among guys that are really good players, and they've got two really good players there, and a third one at Will Levis, but it's not his time yet.
How many coaches will want to be in that predicament every day twice on Sunday?
Well, I mean, you want to be in a spot where you're picking among two guys that are really good that can make it really hard on your decision. That's not a bad situation to be in. But I'm also, as you know, I'm also somebody that is in the mode of, okay, let's, quote, see how it plays out. I know I am exponentially more patient than most people when it comes to talking about sports. And I often talk about, look, let it play out, because you'd be shocked how some of these things actually solve themselves. Well, let's see if it goes along and it solves itself. And then you go from there. But it certainly is not going to be decided this week. It won't be decided next month. It won't be decided in June or July. At some point in mid-August approximately, maybe a little bit longer than that, we'll see how it sorts itself out. And again, it may just sort itself out. Or made in such a way where you have to go through every single slice of video, if you're on the coaching staff, to figure out exactly which one of the two should be the one getting the majority of the playing time. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. It also sorts itself out. So let's just see how it plays out. I mean, if anybody in the face of the earth thought that going through the blue-white game, already knowing that Tommy Stevens wasn't going to be playing in the scrimmage, if you thought that was going to sort it out, then that certainly would be a mistake on your part. That's just not how it works. And even if they went out there and went head-to-head and one guy threw for 195 yards and two touchdowns and the other guy threw for 65 yards and had an interception, it still wouldn't have sorted itself out then either. It's just not the way it goes. It's not the way it works when you're in a situation like this. It just takes time. You put them in situations. You see which one handles situations. I mean, all sorts of situations. Okay, we're in a scrimmage. We're going to put the ball at the 25. We're going to put together a drive. Okay, fine. Now, and you go through several of those. All right, now let's see what they're like on first down plays. Let's see what everybody's like on third down plays. Let's put the ball at the 2-yard line. You got 98 yards in front of you. You got to be able to somehow get us into 4-minute offense and get this thing over with, or minimum change field position. Or, boom, let's put the ball down at the 35-yard line, 2 timeouts remaining, 108 remaining, need a field goal to win, need a touchdown to win, need something to tie. Boom, how does each one handle that? All right, now we're going to put the ball in the red zone. Bang, got an opportunity here in the red zone. You got to put them in all sorts of situations and see how each one handles it. I will say this, that when you are on this offense, you're going against a defense that can run. And because of that, it's going to give, I think, the coaches a really good read on who can handle the speed with which you have to attack this thing because of the defense you're going against. That makes a big, big difference. All right, the Bucknell Spring and how it played out. Dave Cecchini, next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK, powered by Sunbury Motors.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time, even at Sunbury Motors Ford. Sunbury Motors Spring Inventory Cleanup has begun. Once a year, SMC takes their entire new Ford inventory and prices them at levels not seen before. SMC is where you want to be to choose from 44 2019 Ford Escapes. This just in, Ford Motor Company and Sunbury Motors have increased the discounts on 2019 Ford Escapes. They're slashed to the lowest price ever offered to the general public, now at an amazing $18,985. SMC is where you want to be for 2019 Ford F-150s, starting at just $25,899. And SMC has 66 in stock. SMC is where you want to be if you want a brand new 2018 Ford Focus for $14,905. Hurry into Sunbury Motors Ford in the Northwest Street Auto Plaza.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We talked a lot about Penn State's spring practice. Now we're going to kick into the gear with what happened with Bucknell's spring practice. And Dave Cecchini joins us. They had their scrimmage on Friday night. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you back with us on the show today.
Thanks. It's great to be here, Steve.
Okay, Dave, let's talk about this. There's a learning curve in this. So what did you learn over the last few weeks about your football team?
Yeah, well, the first thing is they've been incredible to adapting to change. You know, we really changed the philosophy, changed the way that they lifted, changed the way that they did conditioning drills, changed the way that we did spring practice, and they were they jumped on board. I give a credit to our players. They bought into what we're selling. They've worked their tails off, and it was a fun couple of weeks, fast and furious, but fun to get through these last couple of weeks and get a chance to see how these guys are performing and how they're adapting to the new offensive and defensive schemes.
Obviously, people, it's difficult to lead when you're trying to learn yourself. But did you see some leadership develop as time went?
Oh, sure, absolutely. We had a couple of guys who really stepped out and went above and beyond. Alex Peachin, our All-American punter, going into his fifth year, just kind of really took over and led by example first. And he and Sam Chitty, our rising senior linebacker, were the two guys that clearly kind of led the way. They certainly weren't the only ones, but they kind of stood out above the rest. And a week prior to our spring game, we had our players vote on captains, and both Alex and Sam were the two that garnered the most votes out of them all, and so they'll be our co-captains leading into the 2019 season.
What does it do for you as a head football coach at this level when you have a guy like Alec Peachin as your punter? What does that do in terms of your thought process of how you want to play the game when you have somebody like that?
Oh, I love it. It opens up to me. I'm really big about being dangerous and aggressive with the special teams game. And Alex is such he is a dream, a punter who has an incredibly strong leg and does such a great job with hang time and changing the field position. But it goes beyond that. He's confident. He's athletic. He's big and he's strong. And he's a threat to throw the football. He's a threat to run the football. And it really provides you with so many options when you're sitting there with these, you know, fourth down and mediums, and you're in the middle of the field. You just have an unbelievable amount of options available to you as a head coach, and that's a great feeling when you have someone like that who has so many tools in his toolbox.
Everybody, you talk about adapting to the new schemes on both sides of the ball. But I think you and I both know, no matter what, there's still going to be a couple of square peg round hole moments, and with all due respect.
Sure.
How interesting was it to see some of the players fight through it because they want to show you they can play what you want?
Yeah. Well, again, you're in a situation where, particularly on offense, so, which is more of a radical change than defensively, but you did have to take a couple of guys and move them around. Some, it's simply just a matter of depth. It's finding, you know, the approach I always take as a head coach is finding a spot where a particular player will play the fastest. How quickly can he help this football team out on the field on Saturdays in the fall? And so there were a couple of guys that we moved, and again, to their credit, every single one of them bought into it and said, "Coach, if this is going to get me on the field the fastest, this is what I'm willing to do moving forward." And a couple of those guys were able to have success. You know, Ren Lintz is a great example. Was a quarterback kind of buried deep in the depth chart, a freshman, rising sophomore, and he's got speed. He's got some length to him. We thought he could help us out on the perimeter as a wide receiver, and he took to it, and it wasn't easy. It's a fairly radical change when you go from quarterback to wide receiver. But he did a great job, wound up catching a touchdown pass on Friday night in the spring game, and has had a lot of success. I think he caught three passes on Friday night, so you know he's been able to reap the reward, you know, for making that leap of faith and going out there and playing a different position, kind of getting out of the comfort zone.
Dave, what about the quarterbacks? How well did they perform? And it's not just throwing it, reading it, whatever. I'm sure a lot of the terminology is different. So how did they react to all of that?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you throw a lot at them, and this is a very quarterback-centric offense that we run. And I think first and foremost, John Charlonzio really stepped out. Again, he being the most veteran guy and a rising senior, he really, I think, got comfortable with the offense first, and that was fairly evident. But other guys weren't far behind. I think as you look, really, as spring progressed, a different quarterback would step up and kind of come to the forefront. Logan Bitticoffer was the second one who had a really solid couple of scrimmages through the middle of the spring and did a great job Friday night as well. And then Taron Earls, a rising sophomore quarterback who saw some playing time last year as well, he stepped up. He probably was our most productive quarterback on Friday night. You know, he pulled the ball on a zone read play and ran around the edge for a 62-yard touchdown, and and his completion percentage was very high. I don't believe he threw any touchdown passes, but he was very, very productive and efficient in the pass game and had another couple of great scrambles. So really those three have kind of come to the forefront, but it's still a little too early to tell, you know, hey, is one of these guys clearly the heir apparent? I don't think we're going to have an answer for that probably until the end of August.
But that promotes competition, you know. And I always say that this, I don't think people realize that if you let it play out, a lot of times it ends up working itself out. Is that fair?
Sure, absolutely. And especially if you look at our schedule that we have coming up, I mean, we're playing in a murderous non-conference schedule at the beginning and starting off with Temple and playing all these teams that went to the FCS playoffs or Princeton, which were undefeated. You have that time. You have to look at that as an opportunity to see who can have success on Saturdays, in the fall, and who can go up against great competition, great defenses, and be cool, calm, and collected under fire. So we're not even looking to a situation where we have to have a guy ready to go for our first game against Temple. We're just looking, hey, we'll play two guys. We'll even play three guys early on in the season and let them fight it out and see who matures, who deserves, who earns that starting spot to where we actually get into our league play and we can move forward with a lot of confidence.
I'll define for the listeners the question I'm about to ask. It's about playing fast. Playing fast is not putting a watch on and a guy runs a 4.5 40. Playing fast is seeing it, believing it, and getting to it and getting the job done. As the time went, did you see a team on both sides of the ball starting to play faster and faster?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt. Certainly defensively, we started out with that tempo. You know, Ryan Manilak, our defensive coordinator, really did a great job. And as a program, we really stressed, hey, don't be afraid to go out and make a mistake. If you're going to make a mistake, do it full speed and don't repeat that mistake. Learn from it and move on. And the defense really embraced that. They really came out with that attacking style. The offense started a little bit more slowly. You know, like I said, it was more of a different change in terminology, in formations, in the up-tempo approach that we take to a no-huddle offense. And that certainly took a while. And so the offense was grinding away, and it got better, and it got better, and it kept getting better up through the spring game. And that's one of the reasons that led to such an entertaining spring game. It was a great back and forth. I think both teams were competing. It wasn't perfect. Guys made mistakes. But, again, the tempo was there, and the speed was more of what we were looking for.
Have you and your staff had to make any even subtle adjustment because of the current personnel you have?
I think yes. It's a tough situation. Really, at any Patriot League team, when you have spring ball this day and age, your roster size is a lot smaller than it used to be. So when you're taking the field and you've got 63, 62, some days, 60 healthy bodies out there taking the field, it's natural that you're going to be short in certain positions. You know, we had some days where we were out there with three or four, only four healthy wide receivers. We like to do a lot of three and four wide receiver sets. And obviously you're not able to do and have that ability to have certain personnel groups, whereas we had a couple of more tight ends, so we would gravitate towards having two tight ends in the game. So you do have to adapt just simply to the number of healthy bodies that you have at certain positions. So, yes, part of that comes from changing from one scheme under the old regime to a new scheme, but really a lot more of it winds up being just because you don't have as many healthy bodies in spring ball this day and age, you just have to go with what you got.
Right, exactly. Now on the recruiting trail, what kind of reception have you been receiving on the recruiting trail, and what does it mean to have the name Bucknell behind you as a recruit?
Yeah, it's been great so far. Now, we're certainly behind. You know, the speed of today's recruiting cycle just keeps getting faster and faster. Not
yes,
only
it does.
You know, the Penn States of the world, but even for Patriot League schools like us and Lehigh and Lafayette. So you got to hit the ground running. We're still a little behind, but we've gotten tremendous. You know, we've got a lot of Bucknell alumni who are head coaches out there at the high school level. They've been unbelievable. We've had a lot of prospects, rising senior prospects who have made it out for unofficial visits. They came to watch us either for the spring game or for some of our spring practices prior to that. So we're really excited to get out there. We know that we have a great product here, a great university with a great education and a football program that is a really bright future. And we're excited to get out on the road here in another 2 weeks to spread the word.
Which then brings me to the next part. There's a reason why somebody goes after a job, because they're excited about the possibilities with it. Now you've been on the job, you've gone through a series of spring practices, and your scrimmage at the end. How excited are you about now the possibilities of what you can have here?
Oh, unbelievably. Every day, you know, it's a situation where it's been hectic. It's been busy as all could be, just getting trying to get caught up to some sense of just getting on a normal schedule. So it's been a great challenge. But with every passing day, it becomes apparent that Bucknell is a place where you can have success, you can win championships here, and you can do it the right way. You know, really by keeping the student first and that student athlete, nomenclature, just having that type of a place and environment where players can come here and not only become the best football player they can be, but they can become the best student that they can be and get set up for the rest of their life. So it's very apparent to me that this is a place that's going to take some work. But we know that it's not going to be an overnight thing, but without question, we can be successful at this place.
What will now the off-season priorities be for you and your checklist moving forward before you get to camp?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're working really hard on transitioning to spring recruiting. And with that, I will be doing a lot of that as a head coach, but also starting to get into the realm of alumni relations. Getting a chance to go and meet with as many football alums as I possibly can and starting to cultivate a relationship with them. There's some certain things here from a facility standpoint that we're looking to augment, and so we'll be going out and reaching out to them. Obviously as we get into the summer, we will have a couple of football camps, one-day camps on our campus, and that's another opportunity to get a chance to coach up some fine young high school age players, and in the end that helps get the word out of what a great campus and facilities that we have here as well. So that's kind of next on the docket as we kind of turn away and put spring ball to bed and start looking forward here to the next couple of months.
So that brings me to the next part. You've gone through and you've played, and this will be the final question, Dave, and I appreciate the time very much.
Sure.
What about not just the learning curve of your team, but now you're going to face a schedule? And I know since you've been at Lehigh and so forth, there's been a turnover in personnel. But what does it take on your part as a staff to learn personnel? For example, okay, every single year Penn State plays Ohio State. Okay? Even I, as the announcer, can tell you what Damian Prince can do, okay,
right?
Because I see him every single year. All right? I can tell you what J.K. Dobbins can do.
Yeah.
What does it take for you and your staff, and what kind of learning curve is it to now learn your opponents as well as learning your team, because they will be fresh?
Sure. Well, that learning curve certainly does exist, and that's something that, part of my coaching staff, a lot of the guys do have ties to this conference, understand that. The learning curve is steepest when it comes to really adapting to the rules and regulations, and I guess restrictions is probably the best word for it, that the Patriot League places on its teams, in terms of not quite being fully funded from a scholarship standpoint, having different redshirting rules than the rest of the Division I FCS level.
Than the rest of the civilized world.
Right, exactly. And then dealing with roster limitations where you have a limit, a cap on how many players you can have. So that's the steepest part of the curve, is learning how to adapt and really survive in an environment that's a little bit different than what you're used to.
Well, not surprising to us, you're off to a good start, and we appreciate it very much, the time you gave us today, Dave. We look forward to touching base as often as possible.
Great. Sounds good, Steve.
Thank you. Dave Cecchini, head football coach at Bucknell. We'll wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, powered by Sunbury Motors.
We upgrade all the time.
My computer.
My TV.
My phone.
Isn't it time you upgraded your vehicle? Upgrade your trade now at Sunbury Motors Kia.
I wanna see you in a Kia.
The second annual Upgrade Your Trade event. Now is the time, because SMC is making it easier than ever with above market value for your trade. Plus, save $4,500 on a 2019 Kia Sereno LX. Now just $26,415. A 2019 Kia Optima S has $4,000 in savings. Now only $22,910. And SMC is still offering a $99 a month lease on a 2019 Kia Forte LXS for just 36 months. And all include Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. It's the second annual Upgrade Your Trade event at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Lease us for 36 months, 10,000 miles per year. No security deposit required. Tax and tags extra. Offers expire 4/30/19. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to Kia.com.
You could tell between the lines that when it comes to the Bucknell broadcast, he'd prefer to talk to Doug. So,
got that vibe from him already?
Just a sense. I think he's listened to this show. I think he knows what the score is. Sure, you got into a staff meeting and explained to him, you know, the lore of the suit. Suit actually went to the game, huh?
Yes, Friday night. He and Doug were on the sidelines. Yeah, weathering the weather.
Doug, but Doug, I expected. I
sure.
mean, you know,
yeah.
Doug's a broadcast professional. So, I mean, I expected that. Normally, I mean, Suit kind of bags out of this stuff. Oh, I don't need to go. I will watch Lehigh tape. What? All right. So far, the playoffs, have you noticed, have not exactly been going according to Hoyle? Tonight, Tampa Bay, which had a near record-setting regular season, it easily won the President's Trophy with the best record.
62 wins.
Has to be undefeated in its next four games to advance. They're down 3-0, and they play at Columbus tonight.
That's going to be nuts in Columbus. Blue Jacket fans going crazy.
All right, next up, the Penguins play the Islanders tonight. The Islanders lead 3-0. Remember, John Tavares now plays for Toronto. They're up 3-0.
Trots, the former Capitals coach that took them to the Stanley Cup last year, now in charge of the Islanders. And, yeah, who knows? We could have an Islanders-Caps matchup in round two.
St. Louis is up 2-1 in Winnipeg. Vegas is up 2-1 in San Jose. In the NBA, the Sixers and Nets are tied at a game apiece. Last night, the Warriors blew a 31-point lead and lost at home. They're tied at a game apiece. Orlando won at Toronto in the opener the other night. San Antonio won at Denver in the opener. Okay, Denver had the second best record in the West. And Portland is at home with Oklahoma City tonight, and Portland being the home team in game two tells you they had the better record.
And the shocker in soccer, in UEFA Champions League, Ajax has eliminated Juventus.
Juventus has always been massively overrated, and you know it.
Yeah. Well, now they got Cristiano Ronaldo, so now they're even in the world spotlight even bigger. But yeah, they drew 1-1 last week. Ajax won 2-1.
I have no idea.
Ajax just won 2-1 at Juventus. So Ajax will be moving on to the semifinals. Barcelona shut out Manchester United 3-0. So Barcelona won on aggregate 4-0. The Fighting Jeff Tarmans, Liverpool, Porto tomorrow, and Manchester City and Tottenham. That's the other quarterfinals
in
UEFA tomorrow.
I was remiss in not mentioning this yesterday, but yesterday was the 30th anniversary of Hillsborough, where those 94 people were crushed. And they were originally blamed. Can you believe that they actually took blood alcohol content of the 96 who died and then published it? Really?
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.